All right, the Shedeur Sanders cut that we played of Max Crosby asking him his Mount... what? Hey, Shedeur, what's your Mount Rushmore of QB wide receiver duos? Duos, mind you, in NFL history. We have some cleanup on the timing of that interview. Let's play the cut again first for those who missed it. This is a Take-A-Mania candidate for tomorrow at 9 o'clock.
Mount Rushmore of quarterback and wide receiver duos all time.
So Tom and Gronk, of course. But he's a tight end.
I like that.
So Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, Chris Olave and Derek Carr.
That's a curveball. I was not expecting that either. But I like it.
Whoever going to be the quarterback for DK Metcalf and George Pickens, whoever that is.
Okay.
I love it.
Okay, so we had a few people point out, hey, Pickens and Metcalf aren't even on the same team anymore.
Right, which gives them a pass on the whoever's going to be the quarterback part, because obviously they were on the same team for a little while.
For a little bit.
And then Pickens goes off to Dallas. But at that point, Aaron Rodgers hadn't signed
yet. He hadn't signed. This interview took place on April the 22nd.
Yeah.
So this is before Shedeur had even been drafted. It was a week of the draft the interview took place. So he gets a pass. He gets a pass on Pickens and Metcalf being on the same team. They were when he did that interview.
Yeah.
He gets a pass on whoever wins the job in Pittsburgh. Factually, but it's a horrible take that somehow
it's a horrendous take when at that point it could have been Mason
Mason Rudolph was the number one on the depth chart. Yeah. at that point.
Apologies to Mason Crosby.
Yeah. At that point he was number one on the depth chart. It does not give him a pass for Chris Olave and Derek Carr being on his list. And it does not give him a pass for having a three person answer to a question about duos.
Yeah. No, this is why I approve of it wholeheartedly. Yeah. Once he got past Gronk and Brady, he really just Rodgers and Devontae Adams is a defensible one.
Yeah.
But still not nearly up into if you go to Joe Montana and Jerry Rice or Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison or what have you. Yeah, yeah.
Or any
but remember,
number of...
like, it's hard to squeeze in, though. Like, where are you going to put Peyton and Montana when you also got to get Derek Carr in there?
It's a tough
hard.
Endeavor.
It's hard.
It's true.
Yeah. That's Mount Rushmores are difficult.
Yeah, I can't believe Max Crosby hit him with that very unfair question in that podcast, in that very loose podcast.
I do like in that whatever it was, symposium or whatever that they did with Peyton Manning and Eli Manning out there with Caleb Williams and CJ Stroud and Bryce Young.
Yeah.
CJ kind of alluded to some advice that Peyton had given him. It sounds like that he said something like, yeah, no lists or no power rankings. That's been my advice to athletes forever. If somebody asks you a question, if they ask you to list or power rank or thing, anything, just don't do it.
Right.
And I feel like in a lot of ways, Shedeur Sanders, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
He made a mockery of the Mount Rushmore.
That's, yeah. And that's going to bother some people. Not Seth or me so
un-American
much,
is what it is.
Yeah, that's true.
You defile one of our national monuments.
Big monuments.
When you should be gracing it with the names of actually great quarterbacks and wide receivers.
That's
damn
right.
It, damn
yeah.
It. Yeah.
Shedeur. That's why you fell to the fifth round of the draft. Besmirching national treasures like Mount Rushmore. Jeez.
He didn't honor Max Crosby's question.
Yep.
That was what I actually wouldn't be all that surprised if that did show up or something. An anonymous talent evaluator was not a fan of the way Shedeur Sanders answered a Mount Rushmore question.
It's a better than 50-50 chance. Honestly, it feels like there's a better than 50-50 chance that it wound up on at least one scout's rundown of Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah, like, what's up with this guy?
At least one.
Doesn't respect the game or something.
There's all types out there.
Are you more impressed that he pulled Chris Olave or Derek Carr out of the hat on that one?
Impressed?
Olave, the duo. Olave's been in the league for 3 years.
Yeah.
2 years, right? Because he was injured. And he's had I don't know if he's had over 1,100 yards receiving
he's
in any of those years.
Major concussion issues. I know that.
It's not like Derek Carr and Chris Olave have even had one singular awesome, crazy season or anything.
I don't know that they've had an awesome, crazy play. You know, like what's your most vivid Derek Carr, Chris Olave memory. You're like, what?
Fascinating to me. I'm so fascinated by this answer.
Yeah.
Everything makes sense now. And I'm a huge fan of Shedeur Sanders. I don't know how his brain works or what he was thinking in that moment, but the confidence with which he did it, that's a rare trait right there.
That's
Sean.
The bravado. Yes. That's the bravado. All right. So we played this yesterday, but you might not have gotten a chance to hear it. And I'm curious if this has ever happened to anybody before where you see one name, you think it's somebody, but it's some other person of the same name. This was Dabo Swinney, Clemson head coach, talking about a trip he made to the beach with his family. And he was told, going to this particular beach town, that Brian Kelly's wife runs a gift shop in this town. Now, Brian Kelly, LSU
head coach. Brian Kelly, the football coach.
Well, that's what Dabo Swinney thought. Brian Kelly, the football coach. That's the Brian Kelly he knows. That's who he thought it was. Take a listen to this.
My brother or my sister-in-law, she's saying, hey, Brian Kelly has a place. His wife has a gift shop right on the corner there in Grayton Beach. I'm like, oh, really? That's pretty cool. You know, I had no idea. So anyway, we go there and I go into the store. Me and Kath walking in the store. Kath buys something because she's trying to support Mrs. Kelly or whatever we're doing. So she buys something and we go in the store and I'm walking around. I go out and they're like, yeah. And he's got a concert. He's going to have a concert in the back. So I'm like, okay, I'll walk out the back. There's a little stage in the back. And there's like some, I think it's like fake grass or whatever. Just a small little area. And it says Brian Kelly, you know, performing live on this day, whatever. And I'm going, freaking hey, Brian Kelly can sing, play. I didn't know that. So I'm like taking pictures, and I'm sending it to Brian Kelly. I'm sending all these pictures to Brian Kelly. And then I get on the stage, you know, Brian Kelly, you know, I'm just kind of having some fun. I'm like, you know, hey, I got, and I sent all this to Brian Kelly. All right. Well, then the guy that was with my brother, he's walking over because Cass said something about, I don't know what she said. I just can't believe that Brian Kelly, this is really cool. And she's, and you know, like, we know we played them or something in the opener or whatever to the guy. And he's like, what? And as it turns out, there's another Brian Kelly. And he's like, what's the band? Anybody know? It's something Florida Georgia Line or something. I think it's called Florida Georgia Line or Georgia Florida Line Band. Florida Georgia Line Band, and he's like a lead singer or something. And I've even heard their songs, but I don't know all these people's names. But I have no clue. So in the meantime, Kath goes, babe, it's Brian Kelly's a singer with Florida Georgia Line, and I went, what? I've been fired all these pictures off to Brian Kelly.
I'm glad Dabo told this story because Dabo, you and I interviewed him a few years ago. I think it was like during COVID, or shortly thereafter when the Bear Bryant Award. We were partnered as a station with the Bear Bryant Award, and that was back when Dabo. That you know what it was? It was right around the time Deshaun. It was in 2021 because he made a comment to you and I about Deshaun. Like what suggestions would you have for the Texans? And it was before all the lawsuits came out. But after Deshaun had demanded a trade, and so he made a comment about that. And in the last couple of years, Dabo has slid down my list of people I like a little bit just because of how indignant he's been about NIL and the transfer portal, and he's insistent on not taking any transfer. Like, he is somebody who is clearly, like, railing against the changes in the world going on around him right now, and he sounds a little out of touch. I like that he told that story. He's back on my good list, Seth.
When we did that story, he was on his, it was via Zoom, or when he did that interview with us, he was via Zoom, and we were trying to figure out, because, when a guy's got a name like Dabo, you don't know for sure, like, okay, how do you get a name like Dabo? And underneath him was a different name than Dabo on the Zoom call that we were on with him. And it turns out he didn't know how to set up a Zoom. So he was on his son's Zoom account.
I love that.
And
that's on brand.
I'm just thinking about him going through that gift shop, and I'm on the Brian Kelly merch website, the singer.
Singer, okay.
And I'm just wondering if Dabo saw this t-shirt that says, getting bass, hauling ass. And it's got a picture of a pickup truck spinning out. I wonder if he thought that that was an official Brian Kelly, the football coach t-shirt.
We know
getting bass and hauling ass.
Brian Kelly is not afraid to be phony, to suck up. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I just like to go out and getting bass and hauling ass. That's how I spend my weekend.
Two things I like to do, getting bass and hauling ass. I need Captain Mickey to say that on the outdoor show at some point.
What was your equivalent?
Oh, so back when John Harris and I, he was my first John Harris Texan sideline reporter. We were each other's first radio co-hosts. This was our second week as a duo. This is our second week on the air. This is back in 2007. And when we first started, we wanted to do a segment every Friday where we interviewed kind of a, we wouldn't tell them this when we booked them, but sort of like B and C list actors and bring them on and talk. The first week we had Corey Haim on, RIP, Corey Haim of Lost Boys and the two Corys and some of those things. He was massively coked up for this interview. And
oh, wow, good.
At the end of the interview told us, this isn't the story, but at the end of the interview told John Harris and I that we were the best interviewers he's ever talked to. And we said, well, that's funny because we've been doing this for 5 days. So thank you very much.
Yeah,
you
know? You're riding high. That was a good start by you, yeah.
The next week, and it was David Nuño who booked this, actually. David Nuño, who's with Texags now, was on Channel 13 for a while, and he was a coworker of ours. He did the midday show, but he also helped us book guests and things like that. He chipped in. And the next week, he booked Willie Ames. You remember who Willie Ames is? Willie Ames, Eight is Enough, Charles in Charge. Bible. He was Bible man. He was one of the. He was Tommy on Eight
Is
Enough.
Charles. He was Charles's sidekick, right?
Yeah, Buddy Lembeck.
Charles in Charge. He was the
dopey
best
sidekick
friend or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So Nuño books Willie Ames. I'm like, well, this is perfect. This is exactly what we're looking for this segment. Books him on like a Tuesday. Thursday, Nuño comes walking into this office that me and John Harris and Lance Zierlein all shared together. Actually, Lance wasn't even there yet. It was me and John Harris. And Nuño walks in like somebody just, you know, like somebody killed his dog, and he goes, guys, I got really bad news. We said, what is it? He said, I booked the wrong Willie Ames. I'm like, well, hang on a second. There's more than one Willie Ames? He said, yeah. Well, Willie Ames, the more famous one, spells his last name A-A-M-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
Nuño booked a Willie Ames whose last name is spelled A-M-E-S, and he was, and maybe still is, a banjo player in San Diego.
Oh, wow.
A banjo player in San Diego, Nuño books.
A notable banjo player, at
no.
least?
No. Are there any notable banjo players? Yeah.
Steve Martin, I think that's about it.
Yeah.
No. Listen, I'm sorry, bluegrass people. Like, that's the only banjo player I'm...
Plays local gigs out in San Diego, probably in the gas lamp district there or whatever. So Nuño's, like, leaving the room. He's like, well, I guess I'll just go cancel. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. No. We are going to interview this Willie Ames... as if he were the actual Willie Ames that we booked and just see where it goes, you know?
Yeah.
So Willie Ames, we confirm with the banjo pick, Willie Ames. He comes on the air, and he calls in on the hotline, comes on the air. The control room, you know, the room Ben's sitting in here, had at least 7 or 8 people in there, all betting on how long he would stay on with us.
Yeah.
Because we acted like he was the Willie Ames.
Did you ask some actual...
like Eight
the,
is Enough questions.
Willie Ames
yes.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yes. This guy hung on for that interview, Seth.
Oh.
First, like, 7 minutes. He's like, well, no, that's not really... I'm not that Willie Ames. And we were just ignoring his answers.
And you just acted like you weren't hearing him.
Right to the next question. Yeah. And this guy, he figured it out after about... After about 6 minutes, he figures out, like, he is the victim of a prank here. He started screaming out his MySpace page and telling the audience how fraudulent me and John Harris were. He's like, these guys don't know. These guys are wrong. I'm not that Willie Ames. MySpace.com/Willie Ames with one A. Like, he's screaming it out while John and I... Like John Harris is going, was it really tempting, you know, to maybe get with some of your sisters on that show on Eight is Enough in the same house?
I'll tell you what, I feel bad for Willie Ames.
Why?
I'm gonna buy one of his albums.
Is he
right
still
now.
Out there?
His MySpace is still up. I just went to his Facebook page. Oh, my God. And the first link, he's got his list of links. He's got a MySpace.
I told you.
I'm on his MySpace, the one that he promoted on your show, right now as we speak. I hope this doesn't put me on some kind of watch list now that I'm a 50-year-old man on MySpace. Yeah. But, there's other. He hasn't kept up with his MySpace.
Yeah.
But he does have a Facebook.
Yeah, that
Poor Willie Ames.
Yeah, man. It was fun. I still have I'll send you the audio of it. I've still got the audio of that interview. I'll send it to you. I forwarded it to people. It's almost 20 years ago now. This is in August of 2007.
Did you ever get to talk to the real Willie Ames?
We never did. Ames? We never were able to secure him. No.
He's interesting. He kept working past. Really, I mean, there was an Eight Is Enough reunion because he was on Eight Is Enough as a child. But he kept working up until 2020, as far as I can tell on Wikipedia. But his last, really, the last five things he did were Hallmark TV movies.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing he was playing either a silver fox or just a dad of some sort on
Hallmark TV.
A lot of Hallmark TVs is like. Families are on the 30-year marriage about to break up or something, but then they figure it out at the end.
I'm going to go divorce dad on a Hallmark movie, you know, who's trying to redeem himself in the eyes of his children. That's what I'm going to go
with. Which one of these would you watch?
Yeah.
Harvest Moon, Dater's Handbook.
Okay, so far
Every Christmas Has a Story. A little Brock Osweiler action right there.
Confession. I kind of like the Hallmark Christmas movies. I like that one. Okay.
2019's getting me a little intrigued. Love on the Menu.
Oh.
So clearly he plays a chef or a waiter or something like that.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, who falls in love with somebody. And then Picture Perfect Mysteries, Exit Stage Death.
Not that one. That sounds sad. I don't need that in my life.
I think you have to watch Every Christmas Has a Story because it was 2016 as well.
Wow.
So right when would it surprise you at all if Brock Osweiler had watched the movie Every Christmas Has a Story and then thought, you know what? I could say the same thing about interceptions.
No, because that Green Bay game after he said it was in December. It was during the Christmas holiday season. That wouldn't shock me at all. Yeah,
that son of a bitch watches Hallmark movies.
Stole from Willie Ames. He stuck at that. Oh, I was about to curse. I'm that mad at him stealing from Willie Ames. Okay, we're up against it. We actually have an explanation, a good one, on the Shedeur Sanders take.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we've got a good explanation on that one that we'll get to. And also, John Smoltz had a take about generational pitchers. He dropped a name in that you and I both love. But I don't think he's generational. But I would take him back on the Astros, and he may make his way back to the Astros. We'll explain. Ooh. We'll tell you who it is coming up next. All right, a couple quick follow-ups here. One, most importantly, we had a few people point this out, Seth, that Shedeur Sanders audio that we played earlier of him giving his Mount Rushmore of QB wide receiver duos. He said Brady and Gronk, even though he's a tight end. He said Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. The last two where he said Olave and Derek Carr, the Saints – and whoever wins the job in Pittsburgh with DK Metcalf and George Pickens, again, this interview was done with Max Crosby before the draft. A few people have pointed out, and this makes sense, the Saints and the Steelers were two teams that at that time were believed to be pursuing, possibly drafting Shedeur Sanders. Him including them.
Yeah.
And by the way, he would have been, whoever wins the job in Pittsburgh, had he been drafted by Pittsburgh, would have been him. You know, so that holds up to me
it was a good move by him. I like his intent if that is indeed what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, I feel like it's one of those things where you try to do something nice for somebody, but that nice thing that you're doing for them is going to hold them up to mockery.
Yeah.
If he gets drafted and Derek Carr hadn't retired yet at that point, then it could be an awkward situation. So I'm going to go in and I'm just going to be sure that I show my deference to the senior guy in the building.
Yep.
But that it ends up actually making more of a mockery of both Chris Olave and Derek Carr.
And Derek Carr.
But I like where his intentions were.
I like him more now, like you. You liked him more now after playing that cut just because of the complete disregard for an actual real Mount Rushmore of the QB duos. I like it because he did it probably knowing full well that jerks like me and you would repurpose it 2 months later as if he just said it yesterday.
Well, and as I pointed out, I think he was making a mockery of the question, which I appreciated. Yeah. If he had to sit down, look, if he sat down and his dad told him to write a 500-word essay on the best quarterback wide receiver combos, that's not the answer you would have given. Yeah. I think he just basically made a mockery of the stupid Mount Rushmore question, which I like.
Yep. This was John Smoltz did an interview at the All-Star break this week, somewhere surrounding the All-Star game. He sat down, and he had this take on generational pitchers. We know that pitchers, by and large, we know this, they're not being used, starting pitchers, the same way they were 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. You know, it's 5 and 6 innings. It's a 100-pitch limit for a lot of guys. You know, the days of the workhorse, what Smoltz says, generational pitchers, he says they're going to be gone in 3 years. Take a listen to the names he invokes in this clip, though.
Mark my words. I'll give it 3 years. When the generational three-year pitchers, the great guys that we know are going to call it career here in the next 3 years, you're never going to see them again. The Verlanders, the Kershaws, Adam Wainwright just retired. You're never going to see Charlie Morton. You're never going to see Zach Wheeler. Like, that to me should be the narrative that organizations are going, man, we got to find a way to reverse this narrative, because that commodity is getting shorter and shorter and shorter, and we're going to have to replace it more, more, and more.
Okay, so Seth, my question to you, what's
Charlie Morton is on the Mount Rushmore of all time pitchers.
What's worse?
Why do you hate Charlie Morton so much?
What's worse, the actual take or mixing Charlie Morton in with Verlander and Kershaw and Wheeler?
Okay, I think as far as the take goes, the way I heard it was almost, I would think, like, guys drafted 3 years from now. Yeah. There's very little chance that those guys are going to go through 15 years of pitching 7 innings every night and all of that. It's like you're not going to have that same legendary status, perhaps.
Yeah.
There is like more and more and more it's going to be a committee approach. But I don't know where did Charlie Morton come into the equation?
I don't know. I mean, he's obviously got great respect for Charlie Morton. And I do, too.
And I feel like so he must have misspoke somehow.
Yeah.
And this is exactly like what I just talked about. Even if he intentionally said Charlie Morton, it's kind of a disservice to Charlie Morton. Because now people are laughing at Charlie Morton when Charlie Morton should not be laughed at.
Right.
I love Charlie Morton.
I do, too.
Yeah.
But he's not.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Charlie Morton. We can go. I'll go to your guitar concert and everything, but you're not in my list of all-time great generational pitchers.
We've had to do this a couple times today, or at least I did earlier when that ratchet top 100 list from Pro Football Network came out, and CJ Stroud and Will Anderson weren't in it, and yet Jalen Petrie was the 42nd best player in football. I love Jalen Petrie. He's one of my favorite guys on the Texans. I don't want to be forced into a conversation where I'm having to talk about how, well, if Petrie's 42, then Will Anderson Jr. should for sure at least be ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, because you're downgrading Petrie. Similarly, in this case, the fact that the mere mention of Charlie Morton alongside Justin Verlander and Clayton Kershaw, Zach Wheeler, there was one other name in there that he mentioned, where I'm like, okay. And it got a lot of reaction to Charlie Morton. Now, I will say this. I was reading an article during one of our breaks that Ken Rosenthal wrote for The Athletic, Seth, of like what he's hearing right now around the trade deadline. Charlie Morton was awful to start the season this year. He had like a Hunter Brown beginning to like Hunter Brown start to last season. That's what Charlie Morton was doing. ERA of like 10. Charlie Morton's got an ERA of barely over 3 in his last 5 starts. And he's on a 1-year deal. He's a true rental. He's an older pitcher.
That would be awesome.
Bringing Charlie Morton back here? And if he's pitching well, it wouldn't just be a nostalgia play.
That'd be the best.
Yes. You're here for it.
And honestly, too, when you talk about the veteran presence of a guy who's got kind of a calming, soothing presence. There's something to be said for. So remember the story about when he found out that Lance was going to get the start in the World Series?
Yeah.
And just how he was telling the story and about how he was just so happy for Lance and how excited Lance must be.
Yep.
You know, and then he ended up coming in. Like, he didn't expect to have to come into that game necessarily.
Yeah, for a lot of innings.
A lot of other people might have told that story, And I would have thought, like, oh, whatever, dude. Yeah, I would have been like, you got to tell, that's what you have to say and everything. The way Charlie Morton tells the story, I feel like he genuinely felt that.
I agree.
So his experience on those championship teams and everything, I think it would be great, as well as just the actual pitching. This is the other thing, though, that's so funny about Smoltz accidentally saying Charlie Morton, I'm guessing, when he's talking about how there's not going to be any of those great workhorses anymore. We know that Charlie Morton, once he got to the Astros, became a much different and better pitcher and everything. He's never pitched more than 194 innings in a season.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
When you go back to like the workhorses of guys pitching 250 innings in a season or whatever, Charlie's never been that guy.
Yeah.
Even in his good years, if you take his best year and extend it out over 10 years, he's not like those all-time great workhorse pitchers.
It was a strange mention, for sure.
I think he misspoke. He was probably trying to. He was saying something else.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Poor well, I disagree with the overall pitcher. Take. Like all these things, like this pitcher and that pitcher, and yet Paul Skeens exists. You know, like
right. But what's Paul? So the way I took it was that guys that when he says that those guys aren't going to exist anymore, I kind of think, okay, well, there's some of those guys some of those guys that do exist are in the league right now.
Yeah.
If you talk about guys who are drafted 3 years from now and how are they used moving forward, the timeline is probably a little aggressive.
Yeah.
But I could say maybe 10 or 15 years out that the norm might be, well, 5 innings. I don't know. We don't want him sending more than 5 innings. We've got so much data that shows that over time he's going to be more valuable if we cap him off at 5 innings.
Yeah. My big takeaway is I really want Charlie Morton back on the Houston Astros. After reading Ken Rosenthal's piece here, he had like several paragraphs about Charlie Morton getting moved. I'm like, move him here. My guess is the Astros, though, Seth, are going to really, really focus in on Arrigetti and Javier and Garcia potentially being those additions so they don't have to give up. And plus the fact that you've got, I don't know how much you can count on these guys, but Brandon Walter and Colton Gordon have been viable for you. Like, can they stem the tide? It would just be fun to have Charlie Morton back on the team in the postseason.
Yeah, that's where I think the pitching, it almost might become a classic case of, okay, who's available?
Yeah.
Does it work?
Yeah.
That we're not going to be desperate to go out and find a starting pitcher. But if the right reliever or the right guy who's a starter has a certain skill set, that might work, that they're totally open to it.
Yeah.
A left-handed, I'll be surprised if they don't get a left-handed bat of some sort.
I would too. He's talked about that. Dana's talked about that every time he's been asked.
Yeah, he's not even hiding that.
No.
He's just like, yeah, look at the lineup.
Yep.
Nobody has as few lefties as we do. We got to mix this up a little bit.
I had a buddy remind me, we talked about that Willie Ames interview that John Harris and I did with, we called him the fake Willie Ames back in 2007, misbooking. We booked the wrong Willie Ames for an interview. Willie Ames, kids, was this actor. Somebody reminded me that right after that, Seth, the very next, during the break, you know, we had the screen that told us all the phone calls that were coming in. We get a call. One of the calls up there says Vito from The Sopranos.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, now we're going to get people calling in as the fake this and the fake that. It turns out that the Joe Ganascoli, who played Vito from The Sopranos, was driving her. He was in town for a cigar show. He was driving, or whoever was driving him around town for his appearances, had it on 1560 The Game.
Uh-huh.
And he heard the bit, and he called in because he wanted to tell me and John how funny it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
And he and I got his cell phone number. He and I have remained like friends since then. We've stayed in touch.
No kidding.
Yeah. I interviewed him in person at the Super Bowl when we were there in New York City back in 2014.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Does he do a bunch of those Sopranos podcasts and everything?
He doesn't. You know what? You know what he does now? He was a chef before he got into acting.
Yeah.
So he's lost a ton of weight. Like, he looks really good. He was so heavy on that show. He goes around and does dinners at people's houses. He cooks, like, they'll have 8 friends come over. And not only does he cook the meal, but then he sits down and tells Sopranos stories with them.
Oh, really?
And he lives in New Jersey. So you got all these very wealthy New York people that invite him over to do that.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
You know what? It's kind of related. I'd never heard this story before, but Steve Buscemi. Mm-hmm. So you talk about guys being an everyman kind of like. So Steve Buscemi was a fireman in New York City before, as he was like taking acting classes and just kind of nobody. You look at Steve Buscemi, nobody expects him to be an actor, you know,
right.
Probably receiving very little encouragement in it, but decided he wanted to give a hand at acting. So he was a fireman in New York City and ends up getting some acting jobs, goes into acting, has an incredible career. I guess after 9/11, he just, like, without any fanfare or anything, just showed up at his old fire station and just started working.
Wow.
Like, in the efforts and everything.
Wow.
It just, like, anonymously, other than obviously, like, the guys in the firehouse probably knew him and everything. Yeah. But it was, like, and people only knew about it because there was, I think somebody had taken a picture, didn't know it was Buscemi, just took a picture of a firefighter kind of slumped over, fatigued or whatever.
It was Steve Buscemi. Has he ever talked about that? Because that's really
interesting. I didn't dig into it at all.
Yeah.
That's almost one of those things that I don't want to, just in case it's actually not true, I don't want to find out that it's not true.
Well, no, but I got to imagine, like, he's sitting there, he's like, boy, there's all these people pitching in trying to help, and I'm actually qualified to go do this.
Yeah.
You know,
that's... Well, and all those first responders have died. And just,
yeah.
So he knows, and his fire, I believe his fire station was one of the ones that got
right
hit
down there.
So he knows that they need people. You
that's
know?
A great story. That's a great story. All right, final segment coming up. We'll find out what the guys got going on In the Loop. Also, we're going to hear from a brand new Texan here. Do we like the moxie and the bravado of what could end up being one of the leaders on this new offensive line? We will have that for you coming up next. I love our listeners, and I love the ones you can tell are listening on the Odyssey app. They're rewinding. I like when they jump in and say, hey, just so you know, I'm bringing this up because I'm listening to the 6 o'clock hour right now. I forgot to tell you guys, this texter says, love you guys. Tell Seth I said F the haters, signed Sydney B, male, 39 years old.
What's up, Sydney? Yeah.
Well, we encourage people. I was writing
my demo.
39-year-old males, as you would say. We were making fun of people signing their texts yesterday because that's what old people do. But we encourage people to sign their text to our text page because we don't have names. We like to be able to credit people.
Well, so. Old people do it when they're texting. The Arch Manning says that Archie Manning signs his text, Grandpa or Archie or whatever it is. Yeah. Remember, from people, they'll, it's I like it. It's one of those things.
I don't mind it.
It's kind of one of those things where it's nothing you would have ever known about old people because texting didn't exist until about 20 years
ago. That's right.
That it's become an old person quirk, and it's cute and it's quaint.
It is.
It's the equivalent of your grandma having plastic on her couch back in the day.
Yeah.
That was a very classic old person thing to do.
Very weird.
It was so weird and so common.
Yeah.
What the hell was up with that?
I don't know. The worst would be like in the summertime, like both my grandmothers, like neither of them had air conditioning. You know, one lived in Philly, one lived in Vermont. Yeah. And you'd come in from outside, like you visit them in the summertime, and your thighs would stick to the recliner.
You know what? This is my, obviously they're doing it to protect the upholstery. This is my uninformed take on it or guess, is that the fabrics that they use on furniture are a lot more durable these days.
Yeah.
Partly because they just load them up with chemicals, you know, and fire retardant and everything else like that, and stain guard. So back in the day, it was, you had to be more careful with your upholstery because it could get stained more easily.
Yep, that's true.
And yet, so you slather it with plastic.
Plastic. What
Much
the?
Healthier.
What? Yeah. What the? Right, exactly. Exactly. All right, this is Jake Andrews, the, as of right now, I would say the number one center on the Texans on the offensive line. At least that's what it looked like out at minicamp and OTAs, said teams are going to know on Monday who they just played the day before this season.
The ball is going to be run. I tell you that much. We're going to run the football. Kaylee's doing a good job with putting all that stuff together. We're going to protect CJ or whoever's back there. Mm-hmm. Try to make it us five up front. We're going to try to make it our life's work to not have anybody in his lap or touching him at all. Yeah, we're going to pound the rock and we're going to air it out. We're going to keep people on their toes and we're going to play tough physical football, and people are going to know when they wake up on Monday morning that they just got done playing the Houston Texans.
Hell yeah. I love the bravado, man. Love the tough talk.
The tough talk. Hey, if it sounds
big
to
on
you
the tough
like
talk.
If it sounds to you like he might be like saying this from the tailgate of his pickup truck in Alabama, that's because he's from Alabama. And
and drives a pickup truck.
Yeah,
presumably.
This is my favorite. I love every part about that sentiment. Now, it's important to remember that he's a guy that's played in base. He's had snaps at offensive line in about 1.5 games in the NFL. So the fact that he was out there as a starting center for most of the OTAs that the media could watch this year, it raised a lot of eyebrows because it wasn't necessarily expected. What I suspected was that he's got some familiarity with a lot of the things that Nick Caley is going to do, because Bill O'Brien was his coordinator his rookie year in with the Patriots. Here's Caley on what the new system is like.
For me, it's easier because I ran this system, exact system, different verbiage in college my senior year. Sure. My rookie year when I was in New England, I ran the same thing with Bill O'Brien.
Yep.
And so for me, it's been pretty easy because I can communicate with guys who are seeing this stuff for the first time.
Right.
And, you know, it's easy for me to say, hey, well, you know, we used to do it this way. And I know what Cole wants, Popovich. Yep. I know what he wants. I know what he wants stuff to look like. And so maybe we didn't get to it in a meeting. Maybe we didn't get to talk about it during the walkthrough. But when we get out there and I'm talking to guys about stuff in the locker room, I can let them know, like, hey, let's try this differently. Yep. Hey, oh, he wants this to look like that when you've got, you know, X, Y, Z out there in front of you.
And he's got history with Cole Popovich too, right?
Right. Seth? Yeah. He was when he was a senior. Cole Popovich was the offensive line coach at Troy, and then the next year he goes to the Patriots, and there you go. He's 2 years in a row, really, with similar systems, or at least the way they're operating on the offensive line. So that's what I assumed would be the reason. And I mean, I knew all of that before. But we didn't also necessarily know exactly how Caley was going to structure his offense. And the more we learn about it, it sounds like there's going to be a lot more of a Bill O'Brien, Tom Brady dynamic than perhaps Sean McVay. It's going to be a blend of that, and he's going to make it his own offense. But he's got a leg up on those other guys in terms of familiarity with the way Cole Popovich operates and Nick Caley operates. But I don't look at it as that meaning that he's the front runner in the race at center.
Yeah.
I think it's a wide open race right now between Juice Scruggs,
Jared Patterson.
Thank you, Jared Patterson. Yep. I want to say Jason Garrett for some reason. And
that would be interesting.
Jared Patterson. and also, Eli Cox is in there too as the fourth candidate potentially, just because there's upside there for him.
Undrafted out of Kentucky. Yeah.
But I think it's the three veterans right now who are still all young guys, but we've just got he's got a little bit of a leg up here now because he's got experience with it. This is the part that I liked most, in that when you're watching this interview with Jake Andrews, if you weren't watching it, it feels very much like you're talking to a 35-year-old Alabaman. This little snippet here about him wanting to play center as a younger player.
I'd been trying since I was knee-high to a cricket, trying to play center.
Yeah, that's all.
Knee-high to a cricket. You
key.
Know
key, not knee-high to a grasshopper.
Yeah.
Knee-high to a cricket.
A cricket.
That makes it that much more country.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, big time, big time. That's funny, because you know what the question of the day is for In the Loop? I just went in during the break to ask them. It's name some old-timey phrases that you still use that make you sound old.
that's a tough one for me, because I like to use antiquated words just to mix things up and do it kind of ironically.
Yeah.
You know, like balderdash and stuff like that. But it's not like I'm ever saying it out in real life. I say it because I get tired of saying the same words all the time.
Balderdash is a good one.
Balderdash is a fun one.
Yeah.
I would say stuff from the 80s as these guys come in.
Yeah.
I've wondered, young folks, tell me if this is, I say dude a lot still. And I feel like dude kind of entered as just, that's just a normal word now. In the 80s, it was kind of a surfer thing that became slang. But now I feel like I say dude too much.
Yeah.
But I think that is still, I think young people still say dude, don't they?
I think so, but weigh in, young people. Reggie's the youngest one in this room right now.
Brah has kind of become the new, when you say dude, like dude.
Yeah.
I think that's become brah.
Brah, bro, bro, brah. Well, yeah, some version of bro. Yeah, I could see that.
I'm not. Reggie will weigh in on
what's happening, fellas. I feel like even bro is aged out a little bit. I feel like the young folks, they have different, I guess, pronouns or what have. I don't know if that's the right word or the right part of speech, but they'll do like chat, right? Which is very online, very streamer based. Where you know, what even if they're talking to no one in particular, they'll be like
a Chad.
Yeah, chat.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
Like as if they were talking to like a Twitch chat that they are, you know, streaming
chat.
To.
Oh, chat. Okay.
Yeah. So.
But isn't a Chad a thing too? A Chad's a certain type of dude, is it not?
Buddy, you're asking the wrong person, because I don't know if how that.
I've
would
heard
be
that
used.
Too.
Just, what just about call me buddy?
Yeah.
Which I only recently learned you have to be careful about saying. You call a bitch.
That's true.
didn't realize that. My bad, dog.
I found that out the hard way. I called somebody buddy, and it was like, whoa, wait.
Yeah.
Was, what about Oos? You know, appearing for the Polynesian crowd out there. Yeah, Oos.
Yeah,
I see
that one's popped up.
Yeah, Oos.
A good answer on the text line here from the 832 said, dude has been replaced by bruh. And bruh is absolutely, it's not bro, we got into bruh. The bruh.
Bruh.
Bruh or brah, but more bruh.
Yeah, I say B-R-U-H. Dude all the time. I text dude all the time.
Yeah, I do too.
Dude.
Yeah. I think we're making our point here, yeah.
I never liked chill. I despise taking a chill pill. Take a chill pill used to annoy me because that was something that very quickly got adopted by teachers and mm-hmm. I've been suburban housewives. but I do still think, has chill become... It's kind of common. It's not slang anymore.
It's how you use it, I think.
Yeah.
I guess that
might be an older one that I still say every now mm-hmm. and then, but yeah.
Someone says here on the text page, I say, dude, really? So they use it very specifically when they're aghast at something. So old-timey phrases, right? What is the exact question of the day?
Okay, so yesterday I said something was cattywampus.
and you didn't use it ironically.
No, I said that's all cattywampus.
That was your actual description.
That's all cattywampus. And I got a lot of grief for it.
Okay.
And so it just got me thinking. I use that word. You guys have heard me on the air. I say cat all the time, referring to a guy. That cat. I say that all the time.
Yes, you do.
And the other one I said the other day, and Reggie looked at me like I had two heads.
I normally look at you.
Yeah. This is true. Rigmarole.
I use that sometimes.
I also use that. It wasn't that you said, it was the way, it's that you went rigmarole. It felt like you just stopped.
Yeah, there's an L-E at the end, but a lot of people just say rigmarole.
I don't necessarily agree with the contention that everybody just said
cattywampus. But cattywampus is a great word.
Okay, cattywampus. What was the one that Kelvin Sampson used when I asked him that question that pissed him off so much?
Bugabaloo.
Is it Bugabaloo? Bugaboo. Thank you. Yeah. Bugaboo. I can never remember if it's bugaboo or hullabaloo.
It is hullabaloo.
It is bugaboo.
I wonder if hullabaloo is a whole different thing.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that
you
feels
were speaking
like
bugaboo that day.
Sorry, all you olds use those words. I'm here in the modern age, man. All right. Yeah, you and Kelvin Sampson know what those were. I didn't know what cattywampus meant when you told me the question of the day.
Yeah,
it's all hallway.
It's all crooked. It's all messed up.
I had no idea. I'd heard it before, but I didn't know what it meant.
Cattywampus.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Crosstalk sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing. Those are words that are timeless. Mm-hmm. Right there. So funny, Seth.
I'm just thinking of my sister when she was like in junior high. I was she used to say, "Oh, jizzums." Like she was saying, like she instead of saying Jesus in a bad way, she was saying like jeezums, and I jeezum. And I was like, Kara, you can't. It sounds a little too close.
Close enough for Ben
and
to
she's
dump
like,
you.
Oh, yeah. You're just a pervert, Seth. Nobody thinks that. Nobody thinks you're just a pervert. And I'm like, well, but
that's beside
I'm
the
a
point.
Teenage boy. We're all perverts. Yes, so if you say that, that's what they're going to make fun of you for.
Okay? Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Yes. All right. So I couple of these. I've been known to use the word whippersnapper somewhat ironically sometimes, but sometimes. Goodness gracious, is that an older one?
That'll work.
Yeah,
goodness. That's not used a lot.
Goodness gracious, it feels old.
You know what you say that I hate that you don't say anymore because I told
I like
you?
This.
Meltzer did it too. From your lips to God's ears.
No. I stopped saying it. I stopped saying it when you say you. This has been years since I've said it to you.
Yeah,
you said
how
much you hated it one time, and I'm like, I'm not going to say it anymore. I don't want to agitate Seth.
I hate that phrase so much.
I do say it outside the show, but I don't say it on the show anymore.
And God help you if you ever say methinks. Oh, anybody who says methinks is the biggest douchebag who ever lived.
Yeah.
All of you, you're tied for one. Methinks I have a. It's usually some pseudo intellectual want to sound like you. Shut up with methinks.
You guys will know what kind of day Seth and I are having if I start doing methinks. It's from your lips to God's ears. you know what's one that I use actually, and I don't know if this is mollywomp.
Oh, Molly Wop.
Molly Wop.
Yeah, Molly Wop.
Yeah, Molly Wop.
Yeah.
I say boat raced.
Boat race is okay.
Do you think it's all right?
I think it's all right.
Boat race is fun.
Yeah, it's all right. There's a couple others I jotted down that I just think are funny. Mm-hmm. People that call jeans dungarees.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what they're speaking of? Jeans specifically? Yeah, I thought it was dungarees. Like a particular just like.
Lee dungarees can't bust them. Can I tell you a quick story?
Please. He's so excited right now.
Gary thinks you can, yes.
Gary Walker came from the Oilers to the Jaguars. Tom Coughlin was our coach, and he was a guy who said dungarees when he meant jeans. So he's putting up the list. And you remember Tom Coughlin had a very specific dress code about how you're allowed to dress at the team hotel. Yeah. This includes if you're going down to the ice machine at 8 p.m. or whatever, you have to be dressed a certain way. And one of the rules when you went to the team meetings and everything, no dungarees.
I wouldn't even know what that was. I'd be like, cool, I ain't never owned a dungaree in my life.
So Gary Walker's looking at this list of what you can and can't do, and like, all right, I just shows up to the team meeting wearing dungarees because he didn't know what the hell dungarees were. And Tom Coughlin makes a big show of it. You were in the meeting. Did you not see the no dungarees? And Jerry's like, I don't know what the hell a dungaree is.
Did he say that? Did he say it out loud?
No, not out loud. No.
That would have been funny.
He's like, so it was on a road trip too. So he's like, I gotta go out to the mall and find some non-dungarees.
Oh, no way. He had to go get new pants? Oh, my God.
Because it was like a night game the next day, so we had meetings in the morning.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yes, people are loving this. Doohickey.
Doohickey is a good one. Lollygag just came in on the text page. Someone says, I call my coworker Sport because he's young and he calls me Unk. Unk has become actually one that gets used a lot now. Yeah. Shannon Sharp's
nickname. I used to think it was a dig, and now I understand that it's a sign of respect.
Yeah,
in some cases. Like, I feel like
it
is one of those that tone is required. and circumstance is required to parse out meaning there.
Okay. If you're being an annoying older guy, then it's Unk sarcastically.
Yeah, thanks, Unk. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, now I'm processing every time I've been called Unk and by whom in the last month or so. People calling flight attendants stewardesses.
Oh, God, they hate that. They hate that.
I jotted one down, yeah.
They hate that.
That's all I got. And then people that say they're taping something. If you're recording it,
is that one get under your? Because I feel like
it's not tape anymore. It's not videotape.
So the one that I think of frequently that sounds pretentious, and I think it's the reason why people buck against it, is I'm watching film. Like, especially if you're not watching particularly film, it's just like, hey, man, it's a cut up, man.
Film is real to real.
Yes.
Real to real.
The other thing about that is, John will appreciate this. Because of film, one of the definitions of film is a motion picture or a movie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the origin is that there was actual film. But it is in the dictionary that a movie is film. So if you're watching a video, I try and call
movies whenever I'm, aware of it, films, because
that's what the Academy
does. I enjoy pretense.
Okay. Yeah, the Academy.
I go to the cinema and I watch films.
Yeah.
Now there's ones coming in.
Thinks Reginald is a cultured type.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, I tells you.
Dude, this is crazy.
There's ones coming in now that I actually use, and I'm like, oh, kerfuffle. I actually use that. I use willy nilly. I think
I've used
that.
Willy nilly.
When someone's doing something just randomly, it's a little like your
cattywampus
a little bit. Yeah.
No, but it's you guys all get a pass because it is when you speak for 4 hours on the radio, it gets boring if you use the same words all the time. Yeah. So we borrow from every generation.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
I don't want this to be some skibbity ass radio program.
Skibbity ass.
Skibbity ass is in the category.
That's good.
Gobbledygook.
Skibbity is a new one.
Yes.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. I love that you guys were just like, that one, been saying that one for ages.
No. Skibbity is brand new.
Is it?
I don't know what it means either.
Yeah.
I don't think it has a meaning, actually. So
it's like stupid, but it can be like stupid in a good way or stupid in a bad way.
Okay. All right.
Seth has been hitting the pavement, man.
Basically means
He's
everything.
Been pounding the pavement.
Yeah. All right. We are done. Seth, antibodies to you. I'll see you for a nice Friday show tomorrow, my friend.
Antibodies to you, you skibbity. I can't say that word.
You've already been dumped once.
Jeezums. I said jeezums.
No, that's how you did. You're right. You're clean on that one.
Right. Yeah.
Crosstalk, sponsored by DNMR.
That is true.
Yep, right. It is. Yep. All right. We are done. We are out of time. You're listening to KILT AM, KLT FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey Sports Station. Yikes.